Did you read Mary Shelley's Frankenstein?
I did. I did read Mary Wollstonecraft Shelley's Frankenstein in high school.
Or the modern Prometheus.
Yes, in high school.
Yeah, in high school.
I loved it. I genuinely loved it. And
especially knowing when it was written.
Yeah. Yeah. I couldn't tell you.
Right.
Like what things about it stood out to me the most. But at the time, I like thought, wow, there really needs to be a movie. And I start picturing a movie and it's this one that was just made. So like there needs to like back.
Really?
Yeah. Genuinely. I wish I had a stronger memory of what the book was and what I felt was like not quite happening, but like a kind of gothic, romantic, sweeping kind of flick is what I was like, oh, I would love for there to be a movie like this. And I remember thinking like, oh, maybe the Robert De Niro one would be, you know, because people were like, that one's closer to the book. And then I was like, oh, what? And then wasn't vibing with De Niro's performance. So I was like, oh, wait, I don't know about this one, but yeah, I remember really liking the book as a kid.
Yeah. I liked it too. I felt like it was like, wow, this is cool. Like, and like, this was written in like the 1800s and I think it's cool today. Like it felt different than, Shakespeare, which I learned to love later on, but when I was mm-hmm. younger, I was like, what the fuck? What is this guy saying?
Yeah. You know? Yeah, like you don't like, there's something, I don't know, there's something feel tangible about this, whereas like Shakespeare, it's like, it always felt like lofty and not, like, you know, like people would be like, you know, there's witches, and you'd be like, what? You know, what are you talking about? Or like, be like, there's monsters, and so, you know, like, I don't quite, yeah.
It's also sci-fi, you know, and it's like crazy to it's like one of the oldest like science fiction, or I don't know if that's even true, but it's definitely one of the older ones that I could think of, you know.
Yeah. I mean, this book jumpstarts
a genre that I love.
It jumpstarts one of those things, right? It either jumpstarts sci-fi or jumpstarts horror in a way, or modern horror in a way. Like, right. either one of those, or both in tandem.
Right.
But this, you know, at least in my understanding of it, this is like the genesis of a lot of that stuff.
Yeah.
And so it's
cool. And also, I think, like, because of modern retellings and imagery and Halloween-ish stuff, this was one of those first, actually, moments, right, of any young person's. Any person who cared about books and stuff, it was just like, hey, I'm Frankenstein. Actually, Frankenstein's monster.
Yeah.
Frankenstein is the doctor. He's the mad scientist. The monster is just called the monster.
Yeah. I feel like I was blown away by that realization. When I think I was like, wait, what? Oh my gosh. the Frankenstein is him. But that becomes synonymous with a monster and
mm-hmm. And then who is the real monster, you know, because maybe it all the whole time it was
no
Frankenstein. I mean, we've said the word so many times that it's not really going to transition.
How do you get it?
The thing that's, you know, it's just like kind of just like, goodness, is this a transition? It just feels like a Frankenstein. Because it's pieced together.
Or the modern Prometheus.
All right. Let's start the show.
Jonathan Braylock,
James the Third,
Rob Milligan,
what more can I say? You know what it is.
Black men can jump.
Black actors, man.
Black actors. All right.
Welcome to Black Men Can't Jump in Hollywood.
Hollywood City.
You're the monster, Victor.
Yeah, sure.
That was then him dying. He didn't do it like that in the movie, but I just wanted y'all to understand
sure
what was happening in this moment.
Sure. Yeah.
Yeah.
Welcome everyone to another episode of Black Men Can't Jump in Hollywood. We are a film review podcast. We review the films of leading black actors, talk about the context of race and diversity in Hollywood. Sometimes we review films.
I'm wondering how true that is, because
We review films of leading actors of color.
Okay.
And sometimes when we review those films, those actors of color kind of whitewash themselves. And then they're white people. But yes, this today we are reviewing Frankenstein. Mm-hmm. 2025, because this movie's been made many times, but this was directed and written or adapted for the screen by Guillermo del Toro. Hey,
let's go.
Academy Award winning best director, Guillermo del Toro.
That's right.
And it stars Oscar Isaac
as the real monster.
Guillermo del Toro is Mexican. Oscar Isaac is Guatemalan. Or is he other things too?
Yeah, we've talked about him a few times. So, you know, you got to go. Y'all got to check.
Yeah, he was born in Guatemala. He's just, yeah. No, I was right. I remembered.
Okay.
It's like the most famous Guatemalans are him and Arturo, friend of the show.
That's right. We talked about that on his episode too, I think.
Yeah. This, it's a Netflix movie. Currently has 86% on Rotten Tomatoes certified fresh.
Interesting.
And verified hot on the popcorn meter, 95%.
Yeah, I gotta say, I'm not gonna gas this movie up necessarily, but I am surprised that it has an 86% from the
critics. Oh, that's too low for you.
I'm just surprised because it feels like it's one of those, maybe people, it's not on the high end and it's not on the low end. It's just sort of like,
sure,
there was just stuff that like wasn't quite working enough that it takes it down to this, you know what I mean? It just feels like a weird number.
Sure. Honestly, I'm a little surprised that the popcorn meter is as high as it is, because it's a little long. It's too. Yeah.
And I have actually only heard like not positive, not necessarily overly negative, but I've only heard like these are the things that I don't like about it type stuff. So
got it. It cost $120 million to make.
Is that a lot of money for what's on screen or not?
I actually think it's like.
That's how much it costs.
I wouldn't say it's that's how much it costs.
Used every dollar. They were like, oh yeah, I'll figure this out. This is all right. They're good. $125 million.
Because, I mean, it has a lot of locations, CGI.
Yeah.
You know, some bigger actors. Stars Oscar Isaac, Jacob Elordi, Christoph Waltz, Mia Goth, for you horror fans out there. She was in... Yep.
She can't start. She can't play one role.
Maxine.
All right? You can't give her a single role in your film. If Mia Goth is in your movie, you got to make sure she playing. Make sure she has another part. You got to make sure she's playing multiple people. She is in her writer. Okay. She's like, I'm auditioning for this.
Does she play multiple people in this movie?
She was also their mother. Yeah.
Holy footballs. I didn't even realize that.
Yeah, it's quick. It moves fast enough that like, and they don't make a huge deal out of it.
That's so funny. And it makes so much sense now.
Yeah, yeah. And I only knew going in because I saw people post about it. And so then I was like looking for it. And then it was like, oh yeah, there she is. That's her. But I can.
Wow.
But
she's not the most recognizable face to me yet. She just looks familiar. Like when I see her, I'm like, you look familiar.
Yeah.
And that's how I felt when I first saw her as the sister-in-law, but I did not recognize her as the mom. And she was like kind of wearing a veil, I feel like, a lot of times.
Anyway. Yeah, and she has really stark eyebrows that are doing a lot of work to mask who she how she looks.
That's so funny. Oh yeah, I didn't introduce us, and usually three of us host this podcast, but Gerard, he was doing his solo show.
Yeah, he's jumping in New York City. Different level of jumping. Just still jumping, but just on a different coast.
But then the voice you're listening to now, who sounds like somebody who is smart enough to know, don't try to create life from dead bodies. Don't do that. Don't do that. Let God do that. Leave that to God. That's right. I would be one of those guys. I'd be one of those guys. This is Jonathan Braylock.
Okay, but what everybody needs to also know is while Bray was doing that, he was wagging his finger like
Dikembe Mutombo.
Hey, was wagging his finger that entire time. Okay, and this voice who also probably would feel the same way, but then might also at the same time be like, "You better put my consciousness, you better move my consciousness into that body." Yeah, that voice is James the Third.
Oh, right. Wait a minute. Does that mean, James, that if they figured out a way to upload your consciousness into the cloud, that you would try to do that?
Here's the thing. Of course not, right?
Because like, that's the new...
I don't really want that. But also at the same time, I genuinely would feel like that would have nothing to do with whatever experiencing I'm having right now. Like I still genuinely believe that all of this would be done. And so whatever is in the cloud is just a thing that to people that are around is me and would have my memories.
You don't think it would be you,
but it would not be me. Even if the science gets advanced to a point of like literally understanding how to extract that, I just firmly believe that it would be a copy and not it would be a replica. It would be a, you know.
But would you allow that then, even like in the severance way of thinking, right?
Yeah.
Of like, okay, it's not necessarily me, but now you're subjugating a different something that feels like it is you to this kind of life.
I don't want that. Because I don't want somebody else going around masquerading as me, no matter how much they think and feel like they're me, for whatever ones and zeros feel like me. But at the same time, I also just genuinely feel like I'm going to have so little to do with that. that for as much as like I'm going to say no, it's like, well, I'm gone.
That's your problem.
Yeah.
So do you think that clones of you would be you? Like,
absolutely not.
Mickey,
but I also genuinely think that they would feel like they were me.
Right.
And again, if it were here right now, I would also hate that. Like if I'm present and I'm looking at it, I would hate that too. And that I would have more of a like, no, I don't want that. But like but the concept of like uploading a consciousness, I mean, I guess there would be I guess in sci-fi they talk about like copying consciousnesses too. So like cloning in that sort of same way, but my thought is that like, you know, in the way that they're doing it on the Alien show, like this would stop, all of this would stop, and then the next thing would be, you know, the next thing would have the me. If that makes sense.
That's what a weird way to think of it, because I do feel like, I mean, it would, it's whatever version of you is going to 100% think that you are still you. And then you're going to be like, why did I do this?
Right. Yeah.
No, why did I do this? I thought it wasn't going to be me. It is me.
So that next thing would also, I also believe that, right? But I'm saying that this me, the me that's currently feeling this right now is going to be
nothing. Do you think that the you to, like, when you wake up tomorrow morning, are you like, well, that was yesterday, James, that's not me.
I just think that there's a difference between like a sleep
isn't there like true and like isn't like science like you're losing brain cells and then adding stuff and like like you is not all of the cells in the
right. And so the like the me today versus the me
is,
like
is technically different.
It's technically a different bit. Thing. Yeah. And but that's just like a faster, that's like speeding up that sure. process. So like this is slow. Sure. And so there's the me now that simply feels informed by the me that existed before, right. you know, and building off of and growing off of that. Whereas again, like a fully separate body,
right.
fully separate body is another thing that will think and feel like me, but then also like, you know, it's going to not, you know, it's not going right. to be this that's talking right now. This that's talking okay. right now, this thing.
All right, we got fully sidetracked, and that's my fault.
Is it?
What's up, y'all? This episode is brought to you by Prize Picks. You and I make decisions every day, but on Prize Picks, being right can get you paid. Don't miss any of the excitement this football season on Prize Picks, where it's good to be right.
Prize Picks is the only app that offers stacks, meaning you can pick the same player up to 3 times in the same lineup. Want to pick more on Josh Allen's pass yards, rush yards, and touchdowns? Now you can pick all of them in the same lineup, only on Prize Picks.
Mm-hmm. Follow other Prize Pick players directly on the app and copy their lineups in one click. Whether it's a friend, a celebrity partner, or just someone whose picks you like, hit the follow button and check out every lineup they create in the new feed tab on Prize Picks. If you're like me and you're a Jets fan, you're going to find no joy in watching your team play. Mm-mm. So you might find a lot of joy watching some of your favorite players play. You know what I mean?
Ooh, yeah.
So, yeah. Listen, do I think Saquon Barkley is going to get more or less than one rushing touchdown? Well, he hasn't been that good this year, so probably less.
And Joe Burrow is also hurt, so he's definitely not getting more than 3 touchdowns this season.
Well, download the Prize Picks app today and use code Hollywood to get $50 in lineups after you play your first $5 lineup. That's code Hollywood to get $50 in lineups after you play your first $5 lineup. Prize Picks, it's good to be right.
Let's go, right? Shall we do initial thoughts of Guillermo del Toro's Frankenstein?
Yes.
Do you want me to go first?
Or
do you
yeah, want please. To after you.
I mean, I was mildly excited about seeing this. Mildly only because I was on Netflix and I was about to watch it on Netflix. And as much as just like the reality is, like, I'm always a little bit less excited about Netflix movies.
Yeah.
But I didn't have the desire. I had a friend who went and saw this in theaters, and I would have had to pay for it. And I was just like, I don't know if I care enough to do that. Go ahead and go and do that. As an AMC A-lister,
yeah,
you know, it's rare that I go pay to see movies outside of AMC, but that's what I would have to do with this. I will say I liked this movie. I didn't love it.
Mm-hmm.
But I did like it. I thought I was really captivated in the beginning, and then I think I felt like I trailed off a little bit. I know that in a weird way, this movie actually does like follow the Mary Shelley Frankenstein like a certain degree. You know, like there's a lot of big beats in it that it hits. You know, and then fine tunes some other things. Now, the beginning of this movie, the prelude, is insanity, but it was very fun. But it's hard because there is something about the beginning of this movie that made it feel like it was like the movie was going to be something else. And then it's not quite that, which maybe that's fine, I think. But I do think it contributed to
I'm not sure.
my lack of interest. Mm-hmm. Like as mm-hmm. the movie kept going on, because then I was like, oh, like the story of like how did we get here, like actually wasn't even that interesting, and some of it kind of I didn't follow, like so yeah. Performances were pretty solid overall. Though I wouldn't say any of these really stuck out to me as like Oscar-winning performances or even Oscar-nominated performances. I mean, I'm sure this movie will get because it is like a big, you know, it's Guillermo del
Toro. Special effects.
Well, I mean, I'm sure it'll get some nominations, but I meant in the acting categories. Like, if you were to nominate one person from this movie, who would it be? I guess Mia Goth. Maybe.
That's
I don't
so
know if I would nominate. I mean, look, I love Oscar Isaac. I think he's an incredible actor, and I thought he was good in this movie, but I wasn't like, I guess I never, like, there was nothing in this movie that quite moved me. And if I'm being honest, I think the beginning of the movie was my favorite part of the movie. Which is funny because I'm not even like, I wasn't expecting the beginning of this movie, right? Like, I wasn't expecting like some crazy action sequence that felt terrifying. Like, I actually didn't think that that's what I was going to get. And then I got that. And then I was like, that was really cool. I love how he did that. Yeah. I don't know. I mean, Christoph Waltz is always fun to watch. I do think this movie could have benefited from being a little bit shorter. I don't know if we needed 150 minutes. Ultimately, like, the themes that are explored are the same ones as the book, you know? So like that, it makes sense. I'm with it. But yeah, I liked it. That's all I know there.
Yeah, I think for the most part, I agree with everything you just said. Like, I definitely think that the beginning is the most baffling part, because when the movie's over, you're sort of like, well, wait, 1 hour ago, this was happening?
Stu was just killing people.
So it is strange. It was cool. It was really cool. And it does set, it like sets up a ride that I don't think it then delivers on. So that's, I thought was odd. I enjoyed the performances. I thought Oscar Isaac, and I think I've said this before, but like, I just remember I saw him do Romeo and Juliet in the park a million years ago. And I remember thinking he was so bad, but the reality is Romeo is such a bad part that almost anyone in it is just annoying. and so almost every time I see him like act as good as he does act, you know, I'm like, wow, I just can't believe how terrible I thought he was, you know. So I really liked him in this, and watching Frankenstein as a dad was interesting, because like, I mean, maybe, I mean, I read the book, so, you know, maybe I considered the father-son stuff then, but like, watching it now and seeing how like just angry he gets that the creature, you know, isn't behaving the way he wants it to, it was just like, oh my God, like, you really didn't think this through, and this could have gone, the whole thing could have gone better if you would have just not been if not, and, you know, for lack of a better word, a monster about it. So I was moved by a lot of that. I really, like I said, I really love the like look and general feel of this. I just think that some of the, in terms of the like themes and stuff, and especially that you are the monster line, some of it is laid on really thick in a way that like, I just don't think like, it's unfortunate for. Yeah, it's not necessary. You don't need it. We all know this. Yeah, we all know Frankenstein.
Yeah, it's not a hard puzzle to figure out either.
So some of that, and even before we get to that line, some of that stuff is just kind of like, ugh, like genuinely like off-putting. But that aside, like, you know, the thing that I think most moves me about the book is the like shifts of perspective throughout. And so I just really liked that shape of it, and even though like I don't think this is the part that I don't think that we don't agree as much on, is that like, even though I don't think it delivers on what it sets up in the beginning, I'm still moved by that second half in a way that like that other Frankenstein movies, at least what I've watched and stuff, I don't quite connect with in the same way that I did with this one.
Right.
And I thought Jacob Elordi's performance was great. So Yeah, and yeah, and we'll talk about it as we get through it. But Thurata kept being like, doesn't he kill this person? And then he's going to kill that. And then it was the whole time he was never killing. It was all what it looked like. And it was like, is that a change from the book? Or is that just like my memory later being like, right, he kills this and this, or memory of other things, you know? But anyway, excited to talk about it.
Yeah. Yeah. I reread the plot summary of the book, and I mean, there's definitely changes. He definitely killed, there are people in the movie that he doesn't kill, but he does in the book. But then there are people in the movie that he does kill that he doesn't in the book, which is interesting. Right. Or like, he kills in the movie.
But he does like deliberately, like in this, we see him
right,
kind of like just tearing
kills
people.
The brother. Right. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Whereas like, I remember him choosing to murder. But is it okay? Okay. 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 Yeah.
I also think that's yeah. Like an he interesting chooses thing to kill the brother in the book.
Yeah.
And in the movie, he kind of like accidentally kills him. And then the brother, as he's dying, is like, it's your fault, which I was like, that. Yeah, I think that part of the movie is when I was like, what? That doesn't make any sense.
Yeah, why?
The brother has no information about this, like, to be saying that.
Yeah.
In this moment.
Yeah. Yeah, and I just think it, like, the tragedy of this all is, like, a thing that's only been alive for X amount of months, choosing to end a life for whatever reason it has, but mm-hmm. I think to take that out, like, because the other carnage is just kind of like carnage,
right?
You know, but like, but the, you know, they're shooting at him, blah blah, whatever. But like, to be like, you are going to die. it's I don't know. It's that can be impactful in a way that I don't think I don't. Why would you cut those teeth? Why?
Yeah, it's fascinating. I mean, okay, so yeah, let's talk. I mean, the movie is broken up into three parts. We have the prelude. So the prelude is essentially these people are in the Arctic. They're stuck in the ice. They see an explosion out on the ice. They go there. They see Victor. He's very badly injured. He's got a prosthetic leg. He's like been stabbed. There's blood everywhere. They're like, oh God, what happened? Who did this? Then they hear the monster. They're like, oh God, like, let's get out of here. They go back to the boat. The monster follows them there. They're shooting at it. Doesn't go down. They're shooting at it again. Doesn't go down. Then he starts just murdering people left and right.
He hits a guy and the guy bends in half.
Snaps in half.
I was like, oh Jesus. My God.
Then they like get back onto the ship. He's like killing people. He's like demanding for Victor. They don't want to give him, you know, the captain doesn't want to give him over. They take out this like blunder gun or whatever the heck that was called. That was kind of cool. They shoot him off the ship. He's still alive. Then at this point in the movie, I was like, oh, we're getting a different movie. Like, this is not going to be Frankenstein.
Yeah.
Because he winds up tipping over a ship, an iron tank. Like, this ship is massive. It's just this massive ship that's stuck in ice. And he's like about to like flip the whole ship over. Yeah. And I was like,
he's gonna capsize.
I literally was like, wait a minute. How strong is he? Like, this is crazy. this amount of strength I mean, this is clearly way more strength than I think Mary Shelley ever intended for this guy to have. Like, it's insane. But then they shoot him and he goes into the ice. And then Victor's like, let me tell you my story. Which is kind of from the book.
Yeah.
And so then we go into the first act, which is Victor's story. And we see him and his mom. His mom is dressed in all red so that you know she's going to die. Guillermo was like, just want you all to know that this person's about to die.
This woman. This woman is on her last legs.
Yeah, I really like the, you know, Guillermo has such a great aesthetic. And his like costume designs and production designs are usually always so good. And I felt the same about this.
Yeah, it's genuinely gorgeous. And you know, we're seeing Victor as a kid. And so there's like a playful happy-go-luckiness sort of happening to the beginning. That I thought was really nice too.
Right. But he doesn't like his dad. His dad is mean.
Yo.
And he loves his mom. Almost.
What does he say to him? He says something like, I gave you my name.
Yeah.
And so now you have to earn it or whatever. Yeah. Whatever it is. I gave you my name, so now you have to earn it. I didn't ask for this. Hey, come on, man. Come on.
His dad is like supposedly the best surgeon in the world or whatever. Wants Victor to be that. Yeah, I mean, what did you think of this whole the whole childhood part of this movie?
I liked it. I liked sort of seeing an early, getting this kind of seeds of an early obsession with eternal life or reviving or whatever. But especially in this, I just didn't remember this at all. But especially if this is pulled directly from the book, but especially it being like you failed in your as a surgeon, you know, as a doctor,
right.
You failed. And the way you failed is you couldn't prevent death.
Right.
And so now I'm going to be better than you in this very specific way, which is death.
Yeah,
and I was like, death. Oh, that's that, I loved that.
Yeah, it's fascinating. It's fascinating. I mean, like, I did love that. I loved how, like, they kind of showed that's why he became obsessed. And then also how his younger brother was, like, happy-go-lucky, doesn't remember his mom.
Yeah.
So he doesn't have that same kind of weight and goth-like attributes to him.
Yeah.
It is interesting. I wish they got into a little bit more detail. And I don't even know. I don't think the book maybe quite does this, but it's like, I get the obsession with trying to solve death, but reanimating a corpse and creating new life from people who were once dead,
mm-hmm.
What is that getting you? And
yeah,
was that your intention, or is your intention eventually to become, when somebody dies, I can bring them back to life? And I think it's like kind of implied, and yet we never quite get there, and we never talk about the fact that, like, who is this person that he's brought back to life? And like, he doesn't know and kind of seems to not care. But that part of the Frankenstein mythos is always, I feel like I wish this movie or any movie would like talk about that more, you know?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Because it's such a different thing.
100%.
Than just like, I can create life.
Yeah, because when I'm like, especially, it's underscored by Christoph Waltz's character being like, you must now save
me.
Put me in my brain
or whatever. Yeah.
However it is that he says it. And it's just like, and that was... It's only on the table the night it has to happen. Like that just feels like a thing that you are planning for, you're building to, your whatever. But it not sort of really being a part of it, and it also not sort of even being something that Victor is cognizant of, you know. Is it? I do find that interesting, but I do also wish, like, to your point that, like, yeah, they would explore it more, you know?
Yeah. Like, we see him and we kind of jump to him as an adult, and he's making this presentation in front of this school board and showing them that he could reanimate a torso, which is crazy.
Yo.
Which is insane. And it catches. And it like listens. He like tells it to drop it and it listens. And you're just like, oh my God. And understandably, a lot of these people are freaked out, though there are a lot of people also cheering for him.
Yes. I really appreciated that. I really appreciated the number of people in the chambers that were just like in full support of it, because it's so, it would just be the strangest thing you ever saw. You know, it would just be
right.
World. It changes your perspective on everything. So I thought it was a nice touch that so many people were just thrilled by it, like right. just like floored by it, on his side. You just almost never see that when stuff like this happens. It's almost immediately only shunned and right. and whatever. But yeah, and then also seeing, there was something also interesting about seeing how Victor had no kind of remorse or any kind of empathy, sympathy towards the creature. He just would pull out the receptors and allow it to stop.
Right. <You know? laughs>
Like, he would just allow it to stop. And it was just like, what?
Right.
You just gave it an apple. You brought it back right. to life. And then you just...
It was alive. And then you killed it. And I did love, like, Guillermo made it a point to consistently show that Victor was so uncaring towards other people.
Yeah.
Like, when he's like, there's this giant execution line and he's like looking at different people to like, and then he's like looking at them and you're like, oh, they smell or whatever. But he's just like, oh yeah, this body will be good. Like, he has no feeling yeah. towards any yeah. of these people when they're out in the like a war field and he's just like picking at bodies and whatever. It's just all scientific to him. Like, there's no mm-hmm. thought going into like that these were people and like should he have a right to do this? Like, you know what I mean? Like, using other people's bodies to like yeah. conduct his freaking crazy experiments and all this stuff. And I do like the obsession was so clearly there. And I just kind of wish that they like, there was a little bit more. So I think we're supposed to get a lot of it in this scene with him and Mia Goth, where he meets his brother's wife and he's immediately enamored with her.
Instantly. She ain't even turned around like, yet. The music.
Yeah.
She didn't even turn around yet. The music was like, hey, he's feeling something. The butterflies are happening.
And then he's really in it. He becomes kind of obsessed with her when she starts, you know, debating him on an intellectual, you know, there's like desire there from that. And she basically has this conversation with him where she laughs when he's talking about what he's going to do or what he's done already and what he wants, is planning on doing. And what does he say? Something about vision, or I don't know. She was just kind of like, oh, my ideas laughable. And she's just like, ideas are great, but then like in the hands of the wrong people, what do they become? Like, mm-hmm. you have this idea of like a nation and glory and, you know, honor or whatever, but then like on the battlefield there's a bunch of people getting killed doing the bidding of people who never fight in wars and they're sitting comfortably yeah. at home. Which I was like, okay. But then we never quite go into, okay, so then like, what about what he's doing? Like, what are the
yeah.
ramifications of that? And I feel like we never quite get into that.
Yeah. In watching that, it's just sort of like, it's like she is heavily implying like, you know,
right.
You know, at what costs or whatever, you know, and of your grand idea, but without saying, without saying any of those things. For as much as like this, the movie is like on the nose about you are the you are the monster. Right. It like didn't want to have any of those conversations. You could have just talked about like, you know, what would it mean to make a man, and what is and of what parts and blah 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 and just literally talk that out. But instead it's like, no, we'll just sort of let him have those. We'll let
yeah
him
it's interesting especially given the time, right? Like, there's a lot of like science versus faith or theology, or, you know, and like, are the two diametrically opposed? And, you know, this was, you know, this book was written in the age of enlightenment and reason, and the idea that we could, the scientific method, like could replace God, and we've become, you know, more in a more intelligent species. So, so those debates started happening while religion still played a very major part in politics and shaping the world and influencing people. Obviously, all those things are still true. And I think that, like, I don't know, like that stuff is kind of interesting, but then there is the step beyond that, beyond like, you shouldn't be playing God, right? That beyond the religious aspect of it, and more on the ethical, you know, human morality of it, of like, mm-hmm. what is the purpose of your pursuits, your scientific endeavors? Is it actually going to benefit humanity, or is it going to cause more problems? And, you know, we live in an age where we should be asking ourselves that question all the time, and we don't, you know, obviously with like AI, like that's being thought about now, mm-hmm. to a great degree of like, should we be doing this thing? Like, are we writing our own end, kind of all those fears and whatnot. But I was always fascinated by the fact that like, he's like trying to create life, reanimate these corpses, but like, for what purpose, you know? And
he doesn't know, right? Like, he's not even thinking about,
right?
He's not even thinking about,
he got lost.
He's just like, I want to do it, you know, let me make it happen, you know? And to me, to that same point, I found it interesting that like, later, you know, we sort of see, it's like, I made life. Now what is it? You know, well, speak. Can you speak? Be a perfect person. I found it interesting that like, even cut to later, when he does finally see like a fully realized man, there isn't even a moment of you did it. Like, it was like, that isn't even what he wanted. You know, like,
right,
the movie sort of implies, right, like, this is the thing that he wants, but then you don't even see him have that moment. So what did he want? It sort of always becomes a question of what did he want to do besides just it, you know? And what does that mean?
100%. Yeah. And okay, so to me, this is like kind of the murkiest part of the movie, because we get, you know, Christoph Waltz's character is introduced and is like, I can give you unlimited funding. And he like strikes this deal with him, knowing that he has to do one favor. He doesn't know what it is in the future. He gets his brother involved in this, even though his brother doesn't quite know the purpose of it. And then obviously his sister-in-law, he's like falling in love with, and she's entertaining it in a way that is complicated. And I wish that they actually put more words to her, because like, it's like, she is doing, like, there is something about him that is appealing to her. And yet in these other moments, we just kind of get full condemnation of him. And I was like, okay, mm-hmm. but like, speak to the part of yourself outside of her. Like, she has like a, you know, like a good monologue about choice and how she doesn't have or she made her choice already, and her choice was to be with the brother, regardless of if that's what she wanted or whatever, blah, blah, blah. But like, I still kind of am like, yeah, but what about him are you interested in? Right? Like, what about him are you?
The fact that underneath he's a monster. Okay. And see, and that's what she can't voice that, but that's what she was really into. And then she realized,
right?
once she actually connected with the creature, she was like, wait, hold on, full monster man.
She does kind of, made up of pieces. She does have hots for the creature a little bit, doesn't she? In a way that is bizarre.
This is what I really want. It made no sense. She was very into him, very into him. She was like, this is actually what I've actually been looking for my whole, because she didn't know. And she thought it was William, who is the most, you know, that's milk toast. That's the most pure. Like, that's William. Then she was like, wait, no, Victor. Victor got some darkness in him. That's a monster. I really want. Then the creature shows up and she's like, hold on. Is that 14 different faces on your face? This is what I have been looking
really
for.
Bizarre.
And I think that that's what it is. They didn't even need to say it because it was all in the action.
Needless to say, this movie does not pass the Bechdel test.
Oh, because Mia Goth plays the only women. So it can't pass the test because she played the only women and they never shared a scene together because they couldn't.
Literally the only other woman in this movie is just like a naked woman who's being drawn and then like walks away.
Oh, that's right. And then I guess the family, we had the little family. There was a woman in the family, too. But yeah, no, the movie doesn't pass the Bechdel test. Dang.
Yeah, I just, like her. Like, now, to be fair, her character is it's not like in Mary Shelley's. Because he does marry somebody and gets killed.
Yeah.
Like, Victor winds up marrying some, and the creature's like, I'm going to kill your bride on your wedding night. And then he does.
Right, see? That's what I'm saying. Yeah. I kept being like, when's he gonna, doesn't he choose to kill?
Yeah, he does. So the movie lost me a little bit with this whole like, okay, so we get this cool sequence of him about to create this monster in this thunderstorm. Christoph Waltz reveals that he has syphilis and he's dying. He wants his brain to be put into the monster. Victor refuses because he's like, your brain is diseased. It's not like it's in your blood. Yeah, it affects every organ. This is my one chance to do this thing. Like, I'm not going to use some diseased brain. Again, completely unfeeling, which is great. That's part of his character. It is. It's like that.
Also,
it's like
Christoph had to know, like, what you mean? I can't put your sick brain in this reanimated man. I can't do it.
I didn't quite get
that. You saw me going around picking all the people.
Yeah,
I smelled this man's breath and I could smell the whatever disease was on his breath. I could smell it and I was like, oh man, not him. You know I can't use your disease brain. No offense, but I can't use your disease brain. I simply can't.
Oh, he winds up getting into a fight with him because he was going to like throw one of the rods down. Christoph Waltz winds up falling and busts his brain open. So no more brain to
they
use
made
there.
Sure we saw all that. They made sure we saw it.
Yeah, he picked him up.
We saw him picked him up and stuff fell out. We ain't need to see that.
We really did it.
Guillermo, the whole movie, Guillermo kept being like, when can I just throw in some unnecessary gore? And he kept finding spots to
Yeah.
I know. Brain gonna fall out right here.
These wolves later on, I was just like, yeah. I ain't never seen a freaking pack of wolves this vicious and this bold.
Anyway. Yo, the creature skinned a wolf. He skinned
the wolf. So gross.
And I was like, this is the PETA fam gotta be against this.
I mean, it's
CGI,
but yes.
It was like, but like, they're like, you know, aren't the PETA fam like, hey, no violence against animals. Like, even if you go, you know what I mean? Like, it was just like,
I'm sure they don't like it, but it's not quite the same fight as like, don't use real animals in your movies, which is
real.
What they,
yeah. Real world.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Cause there was real animal abuse in movies, especially with horses.
Yeah.
All right.
Yeah.
So,
but you said this part lost you. You were lost.
So the reason
part.
I got lost is because, okay, so he creates this monster it works, but he doesn't realize it works. He thinks it didn't work. So he goes to sleep. He wakes up. The monster's there. Now, in the real book, when he creates the monster, he's scared of it. He runs away. And then he comes back and the creature is gone. In this movie, he's like, I did it. He's like he's like a little bit scared at first, but then he's like, oh, right, I have it. And then immediately is like trying to teach it things. And it immediately says his name. It's like, he's like Victor. And he's like, Victor, great, great. But then for an unnamed reason, he can't say any other words. Just, I was like, okay, I don't quite understand that, but sure. And then he's like, trying to teach it things. And then like all of a sudden we cut to this thing and they're like, I've been there for weeks. And I was like, weeks? What? Why? What do we do? Like at this point, I was just like, I don't get it. He made the creature. Okay, so it's not perfect.
Yeah.
But like, what's the end game here? Like, you needed it to speak, but like, could it, like, isn't it doing enough to get people interested to give you more funding?
You would think.
Like, if you just animated a torso and it got one person to be like, I'm going to give you money, you don't think this creature is going to animate? Like, I don't.
But I guess the thought is that, like, now that I talk this out loud, I don't even think that this would have worked. But I imagine the thought is like, unless I now present, you know, man as we know them to be, then I'm only going to get ridiculed by, like, the people he wants to convince are the people who already think that you shouldn't do this. It's against God. But he's like, well, then if I can fully replicate what God has done, you know, then that's the only way I'm going to win these people. I can imagine, right? But then the thought is like, if they thought that the reanimating of the corpse was trickery, I mean, what are they going to think of the torso is trickery? What are they going to think if they just see a full pieces man talking? Like, are they going to even allow themselves to think that they're looking at a reanimated corpse? Like, so I don't even know. I have no idea where you go from here.
Right.
Victor Frankenstein.
My thing is too, though, is like, he knew why, or at least he suspected why it's not as intelligent as he wanted it to be. And it's because of the rod was damaged. So I don't know. Anyway, I guess that's fine. I just like, so he was like hiding out at this place. And then finally his brother, sister-in-law come to see him. I don't know what his plan was here. She winds up discovering the monster, even though I think he was going to show them anyway.
Yeah. What? Why was it a surprise? You've seen the monster. Why was that what happened? And also, how is it that there's only three of you? How do you lose sight of a whole other person? There's only three of you here. Just always be in the same room if you don't want them to see it.
Yeah, why'd you let her walk off? Yeah, it was weird. And then they were like, hey, oh, okay. It's like frightened. And why do you have it chained up? And he's just like, well, yeah, I mean, to protect him and myself. And it is a little bit of like, the ethics and the morals should be coming in like, hey, so like, is this a person? Because if it is, like, isn't this kind of messed up that you have this thing just chained up?
Yes.
And you're like beating it? And so then of course, you know, she gets mad about it. He's like, convinces the brother to get her out of there because he at one point is hitting it because he's just mad that it just keeps saying Victor and then he realizes, oh, this thing could kill me like easily and I should probably kill it. So he tries to kill it.
We see him. Is this when we see him bend the rod, or is that later?
Yeah.
Because that's once I see him bend the rod, like, oh, I'm like,
these chains ain't gonna do nothing.
Let's talk.
Yeah.
We need to talk about this. Yeah, I'm gonna let you out. All right. And now let's just chat. Okay. I don't care if all I can say is Victor. Right. I'm fine with that. All right. What you want to do? Where you want to go? You know what I mean? Because if he can bend that thing easy, it was easy. If he can bend that easy, then what can he do to me?
Right. Now, did we ever get an explanation because I know we saw the C where he cuts his hand and then it grows and he's like, oh, it grew. Did he explain?
We don't get
why?
An explanation for why he regenerates. We do and it's something in the science. Something in the science.
Yeah. The Wolverine kind of regeneration annoyed me a little bit because I was just like, how did he create some sort of super human thing?
Yeah. Is the creature's inability to die a part of the book?
That I too? Don't
because
remember.
I recently read a graphic novel that's like set in the Frankenstein universe, but it's like a century later or something, centuries later, rather, not a century, centuries later. Mm-hmm. And Frankenstein is underwater until, you know, the year like 2300 or something. And I'm like, oh, is that like, is he, is that from, is that building from the lore that's already existed? That's what I kept thinking the whole time I was watching this.
I mean, I would think like, you know, oh, if he is made of dead people, you could animate him again. But the idea that he can never die feels crazy to me.
Because it is dead tissue that he is made up of that has been re-electrified. But then what else? You know, like what else? Like, you know, what are the elixirs? What is the formula?
Right.
What's allowing that to happen?
I guess I'm okay with just accepting it. I just like, it made for this weird thing because then like, why is he running? Like, why is he running away from Victor? Like, he never had to. Like, he shouldn't be afraid of him.
I don't think he runs because he's afraid of Victor. Or does he? Does he ever run because he's afraid of Victor? I feel like he moves away because he's just like, go ahead.
No, in the movie, I feel like, yeah, I actually don't understand why he's running away in the movie.
Yeah, because in the movie, it's just sort of like, in the making him this kind of all-powered kind of thing, and that he is on this kind of tear, was only interesting to me in that it sort of really highlights his inability to just kill Victor. You know, he could have just killed Victor at any point, but he is seemingly not interested in that, even though it's like a clear vendetta, a clear, like, if this doesn't work, I'm coming for you, you know, like, but Victor's pursuit of him was almost like, to me, at least it read like, it didn't read like the creature was running away from Victor. It read like Victor was pursuing the creature because, you know, oh, maybe I'll be able to finally put it down. I have to put down this thing that I brought into the world.
Right.
But the chase, it never read to me like that. The creature was like, let me get away from Victor, who will hurt me. It was more like, I just I can't look at you. I can't or whatever. But I don't know because they don't talk about it.
One of the things that I wish, and yeah, maybe he was just like trying to, he's not trying to run away necessarily. He's just like, I want to be left alone and like go on my own.
Yeah.
One of the things I feel like I do wish the movie did a little bit better was like show us, it kind of implied that the Frankenstein creature always knew that it was scary to other people, but like I don't know if we ever really got to see that. And I actually would have enjoyed, I know in like one of the movies,
yeah,
he's like with the little girl, right, and the little girl likes him or whatever, and then everybody else is scared of him, right, and then he learns, mm-hmm. like, oh, everybody's scared of me. But in this movie, he's already like, he doesn't meet, he, I guess he gets shot when he's in the, I guess maybe that's the scene where we're supposed to understand it.
Yeah. And we later realize that he has kind of lost the memory of whatever was going on at the,
yeah, which is crazy.
Or is not retaining. Like, I don't know if it's that he loses memory once he's underwater or once he's died, I guess, because he dies and comes, he essentially probably drowns and then comes back to life. But it's either that he has like lost his memory or that like, his body isn't quite retaining memories. So yeah, I guess in the way that like a child wouldn't, you know, doesn't really remember
trauma,
you know?
Yeah. I guess like we're supposed to learn from that scene where those hunters like kill a deer in front of him and then shoot him that he's like, oh, like every human's going to be scared of me. But I don't know. I just wish that scene was done a little bit better so that he had the child like innocence of thinking like, you know, thinking he would be okay and then realizing that people are just automatically scared of him and that's why he's hiding.
Yeah.
He witnesses the family. This is very much like the book. And then he introduces himself to the blind father, becomes friends with the father, but then he, you know, then he goes to find his, I was just like completely unexplained about how all of a sudden he's just like back at home, back where he came from and like finds the letter and deduces like who Victor is and where he lives and his entire past. I was just like, all right, whatever. then comes back and the wolves have killed the blind dad, you know. And I'm just like, all right, that too, I guess. How'd the wolves get inside this house? Like, what is happening? Like an entire pack of wolves.
They did not want the blind man to stay there while they were gone. So I think the thought is that, like, it was going to happen if he's there by himself. The wolves were going to, you know, that's why they didn't want him to stay there.
Sure.
Alone. But yeah, my man was reading. My man went from flashcards to reading the entire Bible to reading
Paradise Lost.
My man,
I am Ozymandias. I was just like, what? How? So he's not just, he can't, not only did he learn how to read, he's like now like supremely intelligent, like whatever.
Yo.
I mean, that's kind of in the book anyway, but so.
It is. Okay. It's even less explained in the book, right? Because it's just like, he got a hold of a Bible and the next thing you knew, he read the whole thing. And you're like, what? I at least need the flashcards. At least give me the flashcards with the words. At least give me that.
Yeah. We don't get the scene with Frankenstein and the little girl. They cut that. He also kills some of these people who think that he just killed their dad, rightly so, which I hated that. Damn.
And he doesn't try to explain himself, which you would think he would.
I know.
And I guess maybe they want to just have it be, because he says in his narration, like, I just came to understand that some things will always have violence between them.
Is the way of the world. Yeah.
But like, the wolf he could didn't have hate even the sheep. Said that out loud.
Yeah.
Yeah. The wolf didn't hate the sheep. But he could have said that out loud to, like, if we're supposed to believe that the creature has humanity, then you would think any element of like trying to explain yourself before going to kill what happened. Yeah, I didn't like that part either.
And so then he was like, now I'm going to go and find Victor and force him to make me a bride. Not actually a bride, just a companion. Yeah. But, you know, that's where we get Bride of Frankenstein, of course.
A bride. It's a bride. We know. We're picking up what you're putting down. We're picking it up.
And, of course, that doesn't go well. And, you know, he gets angry. And he's like, fine, I'll be the monster that you think I am. And it's kind of like, well, dude, you kind of always were this monster. I don't know, man. This creature had
people at the farm. You killed three people at the farm. There's a child without a father now because of you.
It's like, I don't know, dude. It didn't take too much to tip you over into I'm going to start murdering people. territory.
Right. He pulls out that guy's throat.
Jesus.
I just remembered that. Oh, also, I was mad at this too, because I thought doesn't he choke out the bride? Isn't that what he does? Doesn't he? Because in the beginning, when she does the like, I make sound for my throat, I was like, okay, all right, we're doing the foreshadowing. we're foreshadowing that he's gonna strangle this woman later or whatever. I guess they just didn't want to do it.
Yeah. Instead, Victor kills him. Victor kills her. Whatever, man.
Yeah.
And then he kills the brother.
And I may be misremembering, but right.
Sorry.
Yeah, this made me mad a little bit.
He kills it because it's a different relationship. The monster kills Victor's bride in the book, and it is for revenge.
Yes,
because Victor refuses to make him a companion because they do it in this movie too. He's like, wait a minute, you want me to make you companion? And what, you're going to reproduce and then you're going to take over the world with your freaking monster babies? Hell no. Hell nah.
But I and to remove that to me. Because I, you know, brand new life, at least my kid really understands. There's like a they don't, the logic of it isn't fully fleshed out, but eye for an eye is really like, oh, this happened. Well, I'm going to do it. I'm going to do it right back to you. You know, like right. that. It's one of the few things that is like fully like, this is my process. This is a process. Okay.
It's hardwired into our animalistic programming. Yeah.
And so like, you know, I just don't get, we are sympathetic for this new life, even if it does something, you know, something monstrous, like something Correct. Evil, something whatever, we would still sort of be like, damn, why did he, like, I mean, not to make it about Jurassic Park, but like the Jurassic World to me, you know, is their Frankenstein. And I think that I feel nothing for any of the humans. The only thing I feel something for is this Indominus Rex who just gets murdered for being new. It's like, come on. It didn't ask for this.
Well, it was going on a killing spree. You didn't, I mean, it killed all those dinosaurs too. It didn't just kill humans.
It had to figure out what was going on. Oh, I guess I'm the big man on campus. You did.
Yeah, but it was killing dinosaurs for no reason. It wasn't like eating them or anything. It was just like, just kill them.
It needed to see what was inside it. It needed to
see. That thing was a killing machine.
What was inside it.
No, they made a monster. They had to put that thing down.
All I'm saying was it didn't ask for this. It didn't ask for this, and neither did
the creature. No, it didn't ask to be created. That's for sure.
Creature didn't ask for this. In fact, those men that the creature was made out of went to war. Of their own accord. Right. I don't know what the laws were like, but they
what are you trying to tell our God, to our heavenly creator? Hey man, we didn't ask to be here. We didn't be
look.
We didn't ask to be put on this earth. Why you got us here? You made us.
Listen. At the end of the day, why are you judging me for what I do? I ain't asked to be up here, dog. You judging me?
I feel you.
This is what I think I should do. It make me feel good. You know what I'm saying?
Oh, man.
That's just how I feel.
I know.
About it.
It's interesting.
How I feel about it.
Yeah, and this is all a part of Frankenstein's story. I forgot when we get to the explosion at the lab, that was the end of Oscar's story, and Frankenstein, of course, shows up at the boat and is like, "Oh, he told you your story. Let me tell you mine." And then after his story, I was kind of like, "I don't know. Your story is still kind of." I think you should die still. I just wanted that captain to be like
abomination.
Mm-hmm. Like gun to the back of his head, like, sure. All right. I know you can regrow, but maybe if we just keep shooting you in the head and just move your guts over there.
So this is what I thought Guillermo was gonna do. Okay. To your point of talking about gun to the head, and maybe we just keep trying to. I genuinely thought with the dynamite, we were going to see pieces scatter and then climb back together. I was I'm not going to put it past
like
you.
Like T2 stuff. Yeah,
to have, we're going to see sinews. No, we're like, but like a mix between Terminator and what happened at the beginning of Beetlejuice.
Okay.
Beetlejuice. But we were gonna see tendrils like coming out and like connecting. I genuinely thought he was gonna do that, and I was actually upset that he didn't. I mean, it was still a cool image to see him on fire and stuff, and like I am alive again or whatever the narration was. But it was like I had to see a man's throat get ripped out, but you can't show me the creature dismantled and coming back together again. That was a little upsetting.
Yeah, I didn't quite understand why. Yeah, I was like, man, that dynamite wasn't that strong. Anyway.
Yeah. However, we saw a massive plume of fire. And yet, and yet it he was intact. Him. He was intact. My man's clothes were still on. I know. It's none of the. Actually, wait a minute. Why was his clothes?
Well, you know why. You know why.
His clothes was fine. All right.
All right, and then Oscar just pursues him to the end of the earth, and here we are, and where we started.
The end is
and
the
then at the end, Oscar's like, you know what? Now that you told me your story, I am sorry. Sorry about that, man. Sorry about that, bro. Can you forgive me? And Frankenstein's like, yeah, I got you, bro.
And I like it up. Even less now, and I did not like it when I watched it. He just says, I'm sorry.
Yeah, I got you, dog. I got you. My bad, man. Yeah. My bad, too, bro. My bad, too.
You cool. just killed four sailors. Who?
Six.
Six? You just killed six sailors.
And probably,
who have
probably
no idea what you are.
Probably two more when he got back, right?
When he got up onto the boat.
Yeah, probably at least two more. So maybe it probably eight at this time. Anyway.
I didn't like
and
that.
And I love it. And then the ship's captain's like, this was a... I'm glad you guys both did this. All right. You know what? Maybe I should give up my pursuit of finding the North Pole. We're going home. And I was like, am I supposed to care about...
I appreciate the idea of this. Like, yeah, exactly. I appreciate the thought of like him being like, you share my madness, like, you know, you're gonna keep going out into this, you know, this, you crashed onto the ice, everyone's dead, you know, if you keep going, if you get free, you're gonna keep going, and all of that. I did appreciate that, but also at the same time it was like, you cannot possibly look at this reanimated man and go, yep. Wow, there is a kindred here. Well, let's go home, you guys. Like, what do you mean? What do you mean? Eight of your sailors are dead because of this thing that I get it, you know, shouldn't exist and is a tragic kind of story and blah, blah, blah. But don't look at it wistfully. Don't look at it wistfully. That's the problem that I have. is the like, oh, well, goodbye. And then he nods to him as he walks in.
Yeah.
Oh. No.
He's like, no. He's just a misunderstood soul. He's like, I don't know, man. I don't think Charlie thinks he's misunderstood when he ripped his jaw off. Remember when he took Bartholomew and snapped him in half like a twig? What exactly do you want me to tell Bartholomew's wife about this? Well, he told me his tale.
Bartholomew, and they did it, and Guillermo was like, I'm gonna do this part in slow motion. I'm gonna do this. He told me his tale. He told me his tale, and you know what? Honestly, it was like, it was sort of like a modern Prometheus thing, come to think. If I had to give it a, you know, if I had to describe it, you know, in a nice tagline, it would be this.
Anyway.
Well.
It was good, though.
It was good. I did enjoy it.
I don't know why. Oh, wait. I do know why. I was comparing it to Nosferatu, and the reason why, obviously, is because these are both kind of in the classic Universal monster kind of universe, so
which I didn't see. Should I watch Nosferatu? I only heard bad things.
I think I liked Nosferatu more than I liked Frankenstein. Now I know why there are people who didn't like Nosferatu for different reasons, but I enjoyed it, and I think that movie also has flaws. But anyway,
yeah. But it's like this. I mean, like I only heard bad things about this, and then I watched it, and I was like, well. I don't like certain things, but I...
Yeah, it's still solid. It's entertaining.
Yeah. Okay. I did fall asleep, and I woke up in the middle of the night and had to watch
it. Same. I know. Again, I did the same, 4 and then Tessa came in this. And... No, I wasn't quite that late, but I did fall asleep, and then I woke up, and then I was like, let me watch the last 25 minutes, and then Tessa woke up, and then she came in, she was like, looking at me like I was crazy, and I was like, I clearly fell asleep and put it back on. It's not like I just rewatched it. Back to back.
You know what? Let me see it again.
You know what? That was good. Let me see it again. All right. It's time for the cause. We rate and review films not based on how much we liked it, but
I don't like what I'm about to give this. I'm just going to say it right
whether
now.
Whether or not it helps leading actors of color, fist, if it fully helps the cause, a black fist, if it fully helps the cause, a white palm, if it kind of does, and nothing, if it doesn't really at all. Count of three.
I do not like it. I'm just going to say it one more time before I do this. And I just wanted to be voiced. I said it maybe three times that I do not like what I'm about to
do. I got it. One, two, three. Wow, you gave it a black fist. I gave it a white palm.
Yeah.
And you don't like why you did it. Why? But you did it.
Yeah, the reason I don't like it is because while we were watching this movie, I texted the chat and I said, he's white in this. We gotta postpone. But, I mean, you know, it's Guillermo del Toro. It's Oscar Isaac. We have these, you know, ethnic men at the forefront of this. And so I feel like I have to give it, I felt like I want to give that a fist because I want there to be more, you know, just more movies like this. But, you know, I mean, both are white, you know, presenting. And so, but that is not to say that they have not had their challenges. They of course have, right? And we've given fists. I can't remember if we've. Oh yeah, we did Shape of Water, right?
We did.
Did we do Shape of Water?
And I, you know, we did.
I think we've given. Did we?
Maybe we did because
Patreon early.
Yeah, maybe Patreon.
Early Patreon days. But you know, we've given fists to Guillermo before. We've given fists to Oscar Isaac before. But this one did feel a little weird to me. That's all. That's why I feel weird about giving it a fist. I just felt a little weird about it in terms of like what we're talking about. But I support my people of color. I support my minorities. I support my ethnic men and women and gender non-conforming, et cetera, folk out there. So, you know, so black fist for movies with them at the forefront.
Yeah, I gave it a white palm because, I mean, obviously Oscar Isaac is a person of color. It's great that he got to do this, but I do think it's a privilege of him being white passing. You know, this is like a Vin Diesel situation for me where is it the same if people don't know? You know, and you know, we've talked about this with Oscar Isaac before, but he did change his name so that a little bit of his, you know, ethnic background is concealed. And that's not like a judgment, but it is like a reality. And I think that, you know, if he was just a little bit darker skinned, you know, would he be able to play this role? I don't know.
Different story.
So that's, you know, white palm. All right. Well, thank you all so much for listening. You can follow us at Black Man Podcast on Instagram and Threads. BlackmanPodcast.com is our website. We have links to Patreon and Red Circle. That is our exclusive content. For just $5 a month, you get bonus episodes every other week. We've done some really great stuff on there recently, including Leprechaun in the Hood, Hedda, The Smashing Machine. So yeah,
Leprechaun in the Hood.
It's only $5 a month. You can also, if you want, you can buy like individual episodes there. So if you don't want to like subscribe, do the monthly subscription, but you're like, oh, I do kind of want to hear what you guys had to say about The Smashing Machine, check it out. You can like purchase that episode, one-time purchase. And it helps us keep this podcast free. So thank you again to all of our Patreon and Red Circle listeners. If you like game shows, I am still currently on the floor Wednesdays on Fox at 8 p.m. You could check it out next day on Hulu.
Bray, how much money did you make on the show? How much money did you win on the show, Bray? How much money did you win on the
show? I don't know. Well, you know, Bray, I won some money.
You was there. No, tell me how much you won in total. in toto across the holes.
Who knows? See,
you got to tell, you know. Who knows you? You know. You can't ask me who know. I don't know. I don't know.
Yeah.
You know.
I don't know.
Tell me. It's just us. Know. It's just us. Just us guys.
No, it's everybody. You can also check me out with a Dance Club Remix. Herald Team. Dance UCB Club in Remix. Los Angeles. All right. James?
All right, yeah. You can follow me at Rule of Three Inc. RuleOfThreeInc.com. Disney Stitch is in comic shops right now. Issue 4 will be out this month, end of this month, and issue 5 will be out end of next month. So just, you know, check it out. I think that's actually how it's going. I'm not 100% sure, but check it out. If you know, please go buy it, because you know we want to make sure people buy it so we can keep doing more issues. Because we want to keep doing more issues. More issues we get to do, more stories we get to tell. Just go buy. Tell your comic shop. Call your local comic shop. Tell them what you want. Disney Stitch. Disney's Stitch. Not Lilo and Stitch. It's a different title. That was Greg Peck. This is Disney Stitch.
Disney Stitch.
Just Stitch. Lilo is in some of the issues. Okay, we've had some people be like, "Where's Lilo at?" Where's she at? She there. But it's mostly Stitch. All right.
I like that.
All right.
All right. And yeah. We'll see you in 2 weeks. Peace.